This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Music, the show that looks at the money behind the music industry with me, Steve Lamack, and Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge. How you been keeping, Stuart, while I've been away?
It's been good. I did a show on my own. No one died. How are you? How's the jet lag?
The jet lag's not too bad, actually. It was poor the first day I got back. I was on the red eye coming back from Austin. So I've been at the South by Southwest Festival, and obviously people turn up in drips and drabs, but the entire British music industry seems to go home on the same flight. So everyone was on the 8 o'clock out of Austin on Sunday night. That was the flight I was on, and then arrived back late on Monday morning. But I'm fine. I think I'm fine now. I think it's all right. It wasn't a vintage South by Southwest in terms of, you know, breakthrough artists, I don't think, because I've come back from South by in previous years, having seen, you know, at least one American band who I think will be really popular, people like Fleet Foxes, that band Bodega, who I really rate, We Are Scientists. There's loads of them over the years who've come out of South by, but there wasn't one big buzz band this year. I mean, there were some good artists there. You should look up some of these if you're interested. There was a band, an American duo, who sounded a little bit like the XX, who are called Bubble Tea and Cigarettes. There's a band who the Americans are calling Fakukas. Look up the spelling of that. I think they've possibly got a chance. A four-piece from New York called Lip Critic, who, I don't know who the loudest band you've ever seen are, Stuart, but I mean, this band, Lip Critic, that was so loud. You know when you can hear, when you get that, I don't know, your ears feel like they're starting to swell up because it's so loud in the room. Honestly, I had to step out the venue at one point for 5 minutes just to give myself a break. But anyway, there were a good, there were a few good things. I'd say against this, I think it was one of the strongest showings from the British artists who were out there, though, especially a group called Fat Dog, who I ended up watching 6 times over the course of 4 days. But by the end of the festival, they'd won a lot of new fans, I think. And that was one of the themes this year, bands playing multiple gigs, both at the official South by shows and some of the unofficial daytime shows, just to make the most of their trip. I sat down with the band Coach Party from the Isle of Wight, because I was interested to know, once, you know, how much it cost to get out there and, you know, what you can do to give that trip more value. But according to Coach Party, we tried to work our way through the figures. The cost to attend South by Southwest, they said their total, it came in around £20,000 to go and take part. Which was made up of, firstly, visa fees. Because if you want to play, I think it's more than one show, then you need to have a working visa. So for the band and their sound guy, that's 5 people. Just the working visas alone came to £10,000. Then you have flights on top of that. Your accommodation, which I think in their case, they got an Airbnb for $1,500, I think. And then vehicle hire as well, so that they could get around. And it all added up to 20K, some of which, including the flights, was paid for by a grant from PRS, because they applied for PRS funding. And I think when that application was granted, I think that was when they knew they could, you know, just about make it work. But it's 20 grand to put yourself in front of the I'm sure there may be other ways of doing it. But for them, £20,000 to put themselves in front of the industry and the media and a new audience in the States. I mean, and I mean, don't get me wrong, they were also having an excellent, whatever they got out of it professionally, they were also having an excellent time whenever we bumped into them. And they played about 9 times over the course of 5 days. And of course, I mean, it is a really interesting experience, I think, for a musician. And on top of that, I mean, Austin's not a bad place to hang out for 5 days. But if you want to go and play next year, I'd start saving now, I think. But thank you to everyone who we met at South By. Back home, our first story this week, talking of British success stories, UK recorded music revenue increased 8.1% to just under £1.5 billion last year.
Yeah, well, this is kind of, we've had this run in the last couple of weeks of different industry bodies from different countries announcing their figures for last year. And it's all running, it's sort of in the run-up to the IFPI, the global body, is announcing its big report. Well, tomorrow as we're recording this, so the day we come out, they'll be saying the global figures. And so everyone's been kind of getting out ahead of them. So yeah, in the UK, 1.43 billion quid. Mm-hmm. And that's money made by labels. So it doesn't include publishing and songwriters, doesn't include live, doesn't include merch sales or that stuff. It's just the recordings money. But yeah, up 8.1%. Streaming is around 2/3 of that. And that grew by 8.4%. And they made a point, actually, the BPI, who released the figures, of saying that like 10 years ago, streaming was 8.6% of the market here. And now it's 67.4%. And it kind of shows how things, how rapidly, I suppose, that change has happened.
Yeah, very much.
But I sort of, if we want to get jingoistic about it in our Brexit sunlit uplands and all that, 8.1% growth. So it's more than Germany's growth. So Germany's market grew by 6.3% last year, and it's more than France, which grew 5.1%. So in terms of some of the big other European countries, it suggests that the UK is doing pretty well. Like the growth is quite good.
And this is a continuing trend, is it? It's not one of those things that's been skewed by one or two big records coming out, that, you know, a big British artist has released a record, so we've done well this year. But if it's a slightly more fallow year, we'll anticipate going down again.
Yeah, no, it's kind of I'm trying to think how many years in a row it is now. It's a lot of years in a row. Like there was a long period of decline every year, and then it's been going up. And one of the stats actually from this announcement was that I think 2,245 artists had more than 10 million streams in the UK last year. Mm. So it's kind of, they're kind of very much selling this idea that it's a long tail. It's not just like one big thing spiking everything.
Right.
I was kind of trying to work this out. So a million streams, it's around £5,000 in royalties. So if you have 10 million streams, that's around £50,000 in the year.
Right.
Obviously, that then depends what deal you have. If that's paid to your label, then you may only get 20% of that. You know, but it's kind of interesting that the message the BPI is very keen to put out is it's not just about the biggest stars. It's about kind of a growing number of people who are getting, you know, 10 million streams, finding an audience. So yeah, it was quite a positive message, really. But as these things always are, it's kind of interesting that for the last like 8-9 years, when people have been announcing our numbers are up, the money's getting bigger, they always put in a caveat. And the caveat here is like, but the government needs to continue supporting us and making sure that we can compete. So I think, and this ties into South By actually, there's a lot of, there's a real sense in Britain, like British artists are competing against now K-pop, against Latin American artists. Like the competition globally is even fiercer. Mm. So I think the BPI is not just saying we're growing, everything's brilliant. It's saying, but to carry on growing, the government should do as much as possible. And that's stuff like, that's all kinds of things it wants, but that's the message, I suppose, coming out.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at that in a few ways, I suppose, that it's sort of, you know, slightly, I don't know, self-centered, but actually it's quite good that they're not complacent at this point in time, that if we don't keep up, then we will get overtaken. I mean, it was interesting at South by Southwest talking to one of the programmers, just how much of a barometer South by can be, because there was a lot more Afrobeats there this year, the Afrobeat presence. Obviously, hip-hop's been growing at South by for over a decade now, and jazz is taking off. But in terms of territories, there were more territories, I think, represented at South by Southwest. So there is, as you say, there is competition out there. But fair play to the BPI, one of the people who put in money to what's known as the British Music Embassy, which has become some sort of British music hub at South by Southwest. And it had two stages this year. I think AIM put in some money, certainly PPL and PRS, Department for Business and Trade are a part of the whole thing. And that was a very good place to showcase a lot of British music. And that was pretty popular this year, so that's interesting. As is this, which here's a story which started bubbling away probably about a fortnight ago now, but could have some long-term repercussions. There's a takeover battle going on for the French music firm Believe, who've just, by the way, said its revenues were up by almost 15% last year. So it's a profitable company. But tell us a bit about Believe, who they are, what they do, and who they work with, and why this is important.
Yeah, well, so it's an independent music company. It's kind of a strange one. It's a cross between an independent label who kind of signs artists and develops them and a distributor. So it owns TuneCore, who a lot of independent artists use to put their music out. So it's part distributor, part artist development. And yeah, it's doing pretty well. Its revenues grew by 14.5% last year. So it's making around £750 million a year in revenue. And we kind of know that because it's a public company. So it floated on the stock market a while ago. It declares its results. But what happened, yeah, I think you're right, it's 2 weeks ago. A couple of big investment companies, TCV and EQT, they've teamed up with Believe's boss, a guy called Denis de la Galerie, to try and buy the company and take it private again, essentially. So that it started with kind of a takeover effort, but the company's boss is involved in that. Mm. But then very quickly, Warner Music Group came out and went, actually, we'd quite like to buy Believe, and we will pay a higher price to its shareholders for it, which is that traditional... Like the starting gun for a takeover battle is when one side goes, we'll pay more. We think it's worth more than that. And that's where this could turn into what I'll use some industry terminology, an almighty hoo-ha. because it would be, if Warner Music Group bought Believe, it would be just the latest example of like a major label buying an independent distribution company. So Sony Music bought The Orchard and AWOL and also Human Resources, which is the company that Ray works with. Is owned by Sony Music. Universal Music Group bought a company called InGrooves. So there's kind of this ongoing discussion about major labels owning distributors who put independent music out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
they, again, and this, we touched on this a little while ago, didn't we? The fact that the majors will now buy up chunks of things that have been grown by other people because it helps, obviously, their share of the market. And I guess that's what's happening here. Was there a similar hoo-ha when Sony bought The Orchard?
Well, particularly with AWOL, the other company it bought, there was a competition review of it saying, is this going to be anti-competitive if Sony buys this? But the Competition and Markets Authority, so our kind of watchdog, and it kind of concluded no, it was fine to buy it. It wasn't going to harm competition. But there was quite a lot of pressure around that and a lot of discussion. And for a while, it looked like maybe they would say, no, you can't do that. It's one of those things where if you're an independent artist and your distributor gets bought by a major, it doesn't really change for you. Like, you still own your music, you still put your music out, and you're still independent. So it's not like everything changes and you become a major label artist. But there's kind of a couple of reasons people worry about it. One reason is they worry that the major labels might then, when the next time they're negotiating with streaming services like a Spotify or Apple Music, they'll go in and say, we've got 30% of the market, so we want this kind of deal. But some percentage of that 30% is actually indie music, independent music, that's just going through their pipes. So I think Sylvia Montello, who's the boss of AIM, the indie labels body, she said it was gravely concerning if Warner buys Believe, because it's just part of that ongoing trend of the pipes.
Yeah, I noticed that AIM seem, which is the Association of Independent Music over here, AIM seem very concerned by this. Mm. They seem very anxious that this could be detrimental to the musical landscape.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because it could work for an individual artist. Like, so Ray is a really good example, actually. So she works with Human Resources, which was bought by Sony Music a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. So she owns her music. She is an independent artist. She's done this on her own terms. Mm. But the fact that the company she works with has Sony as a parent company means she can tap into the marketing and the kind of distribution stuff that Sony has. So I think The Orchard, for example, another bit of Sony Music, they worked on some of the marketing for her album and helped her kind of do the marketing side. So for an artist, it can be quite a good thing in that you can remain independent, you can own your rights, but you can tap into that major's, you know, the might when it comes to marketing without losing control of music. But I think for the independent sector, they do worry that actually the number of truly independent ways to put your music out, if that's diminishing, that's a worry for them. And, you know, there still are, like, there's DistroKid, a big distributor, it's independent. They're still independent, but there is this trend over time of the majors saying, well, I mean, we talked about this, didn't we? That I think the majors see the way the wind is blowing. I think maybe more big artists are going to want to be independent. Mm. And so that's why the major labels want to have these businesses. It's not just that they want to have pretend market share. It's that they realize that actually maybe some of their biggest artists in the future will say, we'd like to shift to a different way of working with you. And that's what will happen with these divisions.
But I suppose part of the problem is you know, it's the fact that if you have a successful independent company, if you've built up a successful independent company, well, obviously there's nothing to stop the independent company selling out if they want to. But at the same time, I don't know, when you've got to the level where you have got some muscle, so then for the independent sector to then lose one of those companies, one of those big companies, which is, you know, part of their sector, to essentially a major, then that's the concern, I would have thought, probably to them.
I think so. It's just one of those things, and it's not been bought yet. It might get bought by the investment firms and the boss. So, you know, it's, but I think everyone is, I think I sense that everyone is getting ready so that if Warner end up as a victor, then everyone's going to jump into action and say, right, we don't want this. We don't like this. We're going to, you know, they'll be talking to, hoping that regulators will take a look at it. So I think, yeah, we have to wait and see what happens. But there is going to be, I think, a lot of noise if Warner ends up as the bidder that kind of is in pole position.
Next, a story which relates to to something which was a hot topic of debate at South by Southwest, which was AI. I mean, they must have run about 30 panels discussing various aspects and implications of AI over the course of South by, both at the tech bit of the festival, and then it carried on during the music part of the festival. And they had a huge exhibition centre, which was displaying, you know, various advances in new tech, a lot of virtual reality stuff, and a lot of stands, you know, talking about AI. Now, the European Parliament has passed the Artificial Intelligence Act, which sets out rules for AI transparency and copyright compliance. Can you untangle that for me?
Yeah, I love a regulatory story. So this has been going on for a little while now. It's a new law in the European Union, so it doesn't apply to us yet, but there will be an impact. It's the first part of the world to really kind of set some rules for AI. And it's all kinds of AI. Like, it's everything from like defense tech and facial recognition tech, like some of the worrying stuff, through to chatbots, through to generative AI to make images and music and so on. So it's like the full gamut of everything AI. The music industry has been really involved in this process all the way along, saying what we'd like as part of this is for you to set some rules, particularly on transparency. And by that, they mean if you are developing a musical AI, that you have to say what you've trained it on. You have to kind of make it open so that people will know if you're using copyrighted music, if you're using music of artists to train your AI.
Right.
And that is kind of part of this. And again, it's wider than music. It applies to chatbots being trained on websites and books and, you know, all kinds of stuff. This act was approved. So it wasn't even really a close vote. Like, it was, I think 523 MEPs were in favour and 46 against, and then 49 abstain. So it was like a very, you know, most people there voted for it. And now over the next 2 years, because this is how European law works, it will get put into practice by the different member countries of the EU. And this is where, for us, we've got to wait for the British government to kind of make its own AI legislation. You know, they haven't done that yet. But I think what the EU does is coming, but because it's the first big region of the world to do this, the US will be looking at it, the UK will be looking at it. It's kind of, it might set the tone for how you should regulate AI. And one of the big talking points has been they want to balance, it's so early that they don't want to write the law now that won't be relevant in a couple of years' time, or, you know, that will be outdated. And they also don't want to overregulate it so that AI companies in Europe can't do well. But they also don't, they want to protect creators. And luckily that was in there, you know, because sometimes when these things happen, you've got some people from the tech industry on one side saying, don't put regulation on us. Don't, you know, you can trust us to treat musicians fairly. And you've got the music industry traditionally saying, no, you can't give them firm rules. Yeah. And that's usually the battle, and it was here. But it's kind of promising. Like, it feels like it's something, you know, it feels like it's a fine principle, you know, tell us what you trained it on.
Yeah, is there anything in there that then says you can stop people training their AI tech on your music, or is that going to be the next thing? Do you have any recourse to action if you are, I don't know, the Arctic Monkeys, and you don't want a certain company training their, you know, aspiring guitar band AI on your music? Can you say, can you tell them to hop it?
It would be none. That's the next step, I think. Yeah. So at the moment, there's this big debate about whether maybe the existing copyright laws we have are fine for this. Like, if you train an AI without permission, maybe you can do a traditional copyright infringement lawsuit. So right. Yeah, what the EU's thing does is more about transparency and saying you have to say what you've trained it on. In terms of what you do next, if you find something's been trained on music that you shouldn't have, that's kind of much more of a grey area.
Right.
I mean, the one thing I'm writing about this, I'm quite a nerd about this. I'm writing about it quite a lot. There's some really good stuff happening alongside all this. So like even just this morning, there was a company, I love this word, I probably can't say it. There's a startup in the UK that's come out with a thing called the Combobulator this morning, which is an AI instrument that has been trained on what they say are artist brains. And I'm, for the purposes of audio, I'm doing quote marks of artist brains. But what they're doing is they're working with artists and to train its AI on each individual artist completely with their participant, and the artist gets 50% of any money they make from selling that to people.
Right.
So that's kind of one example of startup doing well. There's a thing called Fairly Trained set up by one of the biggest experts in AI music, and that's getting startups to say, yes, we will treat music properly, we'll license music properly, we won't do dodgy stuff. So in a way, the fact that there's people regulating over here in the EU, but there's also stuff going on within the AI and the music market of like almost voluntary stuff saying, actually, let's do the good thing, and let's kind of point to the companies doing the good thing and say they're good. So there's positive stuff that isn't based on laws forcing you to do it, if that makes sense. So that's quite encouraging.
Yeah. Time for a couple more, I think. Firstly, this: Deezer has removed 26 million tracks from its platform. When I saw this in the notes through the final stages of jet lag, I was thinking, crikey, have they editorially just decided we're just going to start removing bands or artists we don't like? That's not the case. But 27 million tracks have disappeared from Deezer. Why?
Yeah, well, it would be funny if it was just someone there going, you know what, I really don't like Arctic Monkeys. Let's spin them up.
Yeah.
So this is part of, we talked before, didn't we, about this whole idea of artist-centric streaming. And it's like Deezer is one of the companies saying, we're going to change the way we do stuff. And for them, it's about cracking down on fraud, separating out non-music noise content, so like white noise and wave sounds, and then shifting its royalties towards professional artists. And yeah, last week it said, as part of this move, I think it was, I'm trying to think if it's 26 or 27 million tracks. And it said including noise, mono track albums, which apparently are whole albums of just one track. So it's when you've uploaded the same track 10 times and packaged it as an album.
Right.
Which apparently some people are doing to game the system, you know. Mm. Fake artists and tracks that haven't been listened to in the last 12 months. And we talked, I think, recently about that research saying, I think it was about 45.6 million tracks had got zero plays last year. So it's tough. And it was funny. I found it kind of weird, really. There was a moment a couple of years ago when all the streaming services were kind of almost coming out to say how many tracks they had. Like, we've got 100 million. Mm. Like, about three or four services announced that figure within months of each other, saying, this is a good thing. Look how much music we've got. And it's kind of going the other way now. Maybe Deezer is saying, actually, look how much we were moving. And that's making us responsible. You know, that we have our catalogs getting smaller, not bigger. And that seems to be the trend. So that was kind of interesting to see them. You're making that a virtue.
So in theory, then, if you take out the white noise and the unlistened to tracks, does that free up money to pay other artists, or are you merely making it easier for people to find music because there's less of it on there?
So some of this is basically these tracks would have been getting royalties, and for whatever reason, so Deezer said actually last year that it was going to take out noise content and do its own that wouldn't earn royalties. So this is part of that. So it's about the fake artists. Fake artists is kind of a weird one because there's not really much transparency, to use that word again, around how they decide who's a fake artist and who isn't.
Mm.
So in theory, a fake artist could be some fraudster with a warehouse full of devices streaming their music. But sometimes fake artists turn out to be just composers operating on different aliases, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something. Have you seen? I only saw this this morning. I think it was Music Business Worldwide reported this, or that's where I saw it, that there's a fake. I don't know if you've have you seen this story? There's a fake artist, one fake artist, who has come up with multiple personalities and has been streamed billions of times. Have you seen the figures? I can't remember the figures.
Yeah. Well, so I was following it back because I saw the MBW story and I followed it. And it comes from a Swedish newspaper called, and I'm sorry for Swedish listeners, it's Dagens Nyheter. I don't know how to pronounce it. But it's like a newspaper, but it's got a history of reporting on the streaming industry. And yeah, it did support. So I had to go and read this report in Swedish and then do a Google Translate to get it. But yeah, so it's this guy called Johan Rohr, again, might be the wrong way of saying it, who has recorded under more than 650 different aliases.
Wow, 650 different aliases. That's a record. Well, I mean, imagine just trying to come up with 650 different band names.
He's the Mr. Ben of the streaming world, I think, every day. But so he makes this kind of mood music, it's called. So peaceful piano music, like stuff that's kind of relaxing music.
Mm.
And yeah, this report said he had 15 billion streams. And they said more than ABBA, which I imagine in Sweden is quite a seismic thing to say. Like,
yeah.
And it's weird because, in a way, there's nothing wrong happening here. This is just a composer with lots of aliases, isn't he? He works for this company called Overtone Music, who do mood music, and this is their kind of business model. It's like, you know, they put out lots of mood music. It gets streamed a lot on Spotify. But it was interesting that The Guardian also covered this, and they had some statements from this company and from Spotify, and they all sounded kind of preemptively defensive, like saying there's nothing wrong happening, nothing bad about this. And Spotify was saying this is all being played in our focus hub, and so it's not competing with the other artists. And everyone seems a little bit twitchy because I think they're worried maybe the music industry to go, hang on a minute, there's something wrong here. But as I can see it at the moment, it's just literally someone making kind of chill out music at huge scale and putting it out. But it's he's one of the top 100 artists in the world on Spotify, apparently, and no one knew his name before these reports.
Or his various names. Names and aliases. If you had a playlist on yesterday, a chill out playlist, you might have been listening to his music and you wouldn't know.
I've been listening to the Relaxing Music for Dogs playlist on Spotify. And when I got my new dog, and she was a little bit anxious because she's a rescue dog. And so when she was in the office with me, I was putting on relaxing, and it was all kind of basically very slow piano music.
Mm. Now we know where the money is in the music industry. Yeah. It's writing slow, relaxing piano music for dogs. There you go. That will get you a publishing deal. Shall we do this one last story? I think we'll do the and finally story of what we've got left. Let's do our classic and finally story for this episode. And finally, a lot of guitarists have got together for a charity single.
They have. It's Mark Knopfler. Is it Knopfler? I was on a Knopfler, but I think that's probably what
No, Knopfler. Yeah.
Knopfler. Definitely Knopfler. Yeah.
Do you know what? Do you know? I'm not saying this is this. You take the word of a landlady in Harlow, Newtown, as the definitive when it comes to pronunciations, for being the authority on pronunciations. But my landlady, when I studied journalism at Harlow Tech, I stayed. We all had to stay in digs. And my landlady's friend was the landlady who put up Mark Knopfler when he studied there. And they all say Knopfler. So
Wow, there you go. That's unimpeachable. But yeah, I mean, so he's put together this charity single, which is in aid of Teenage Cancer Trust and Teen Cancer America. So really good charities. And yeah, he's got it's this list of cast of thousands. It's Sting, Eric Clapton, Joan Jett, Ronnie Wood, Peter Frampton, Dwayne Eddy, just a long, long list of guitarists who've kind of collaborated on this recording, which I haven't listened to yet. But I almost don't want to, because in my head, it's all of them playing at once. Like, you know when those fireworks displays set up all the fireworks at once by accident? I want it to be that, a guitarist. But it's a good thing. Like, in the 80s, you would have a charity gig, wouldn't you? And you'd get all these kind of storied stars in the industry. Now, you can still do that, but this is more about, you know, getting together into a studio. And the story becomes all these people on one song. What's it going to sound like?
And who's vying to do the big solo?
It'd be great if they just compete. I mean, I almost think I want to be one. Have you ever seen that video? I think it's Prince doing While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And he kind of comes on stage and visibly is very happy to be wiping the stage with all the other guitarists on it. You know, like that competitive instinct that I think a lot of guitarists have it. But, you know, the other thing is maybe it's just Mark Knopfler in the mix and everyone else is playing rhythm guitar. You know, he might be like, this is my... But it's a cool thing, you know. As much as I laugh about it, like, it's a cool thing. It's like the charity single isn't dead in the streaming age, you know. But maybe you just need that story around it to get people to listen and get people to buy it. So that's what's happened here. There's like a story of them all getting together, and it's out now, I think.
Excellent. And we'll leave it there for this time around. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And if you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe in your podcast app and give us a review and a rating, and maybe even tell a couple of other people about it. That would be much appreciated. And of course, if you have a question, we'll get around to doing some of these very shortly. Any questions you have about the music industry and how it works financially, drop us a line. You can email us at this address, which Stuart has now memorized off the top of your head.
I have theprice of music podcast@gmail.com.
That's it. Thanks very much, everyone. Ta-ra.